Welcome to the commentary track for Shattered Glass.
Yeah.
On Culture Snob, and you are supposed to push the play button in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Push.
That's awesome. Ginger.
God,
the noise you hear is the dog playing with her hedgehog.
Grunting hedgehog.
All right, so this is going to be a commentary track kind of on a movie that you like quite a bit, that I enjoy a lot, but don't necessarily think is good.
There's a grammatical error here. It should be "was composed of 15 writers."
Yeah, you and composed, dude. That was one of the first things I learned about Jeff, is that he hates the word comprised.
It's almost misused.
Yeah, and you said, when in doubt, never use it. You said use composed, and I have ever since, if you notice that.
There's Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm. That's him. Yeah, that opening, the opening crawl kind of is already a little bit too much for me just at the start. It's a little bit too serious for me right at the start.
You mean
their
the
median age was only 26 years old. Kind of like, bad things are going to happen because young people are in charge. It's a little bit on the nose.
Whippersnappers.
Yeah.
It's a hard movie to get into because you've got that and then you're followed by this, the kind of the fantasy elements of this whole...
Right. Which you don't necessarily know are fantasy elements the first time you see it, though. You know?
Until the end when it becomes clear.
Sure, but right. But at the beginning, I think they're not necessarily wanting us to think this is fantasy. I think they want us to think it's a reverie as opposed to something fake, which it obviously, as we learn, is, you know. To wrap around your slick willy, you know? Clever.
By the way, we are drinking and have been drinking for several hours.
Oh, yeah.
Not several.
Oh, okay, dog just laying on my cock again. Just so we know.
Ginger.
How's the volume for you, Mike? You want it louder?
No, I'm great. I'm good. I got subtitles. I'm fine. Highland Park, so it's close.
Yes, it's where you grew up, right?
And it's kind of where I grew up. It's about 45 minutes away from Crystal Lake, Illinois.
Where's that college? To LaGrange.
Okay.
No, where is it? I'm asking.
Oh, where LaGrange is?
Yeah.
Gosh. I mean, it's Chicago suburb. It's
It's okay if you don't know.
I don't.
Shout out to LaGrange.
Yeah.
Not only that, is the Culture Snob's wife, Pamela.
Ah, yes. And the Culture Snob's employee, Mike.
He's the film critic for the River City's Reader, Mike
right.
Schultz.
That's right. Yeah, this opening thing bothers me a lot. Because it's so phony that on a first viewing...
But I was really bothered
by it.
It being so phony should be a red flag to people. On the other hand, I think the danger of it, to me, is that you're watching it, and you're going to say, what the fuck is this? This is stupid, and turn it off.
Well, it's phony, but it's not phony in any worse way than most movies are phony, because they're badly acted.
That's true.
This one is badly acted. It's obvious the teacher is too proud of her child.
Badly acted on purpose.
Exactly. You find out that that's true. Yeah. But on the first viewing, there's no reason for you to think that at all. And so you're kind of going, oh, Lord, it's going to be badly acted right off the bat. It turns out that's not what happens, but by then it's too late. You've already been annoyed by the bad acting, I think. I think the whole flashbacky structure is so wrong for this movie. I think they needed to deal with Peter Sarsgaard. I think they really needed to... deal with him or deal with Glass. They kind of turn out not doing either. We'll talk about that as the movie goes on. I think they let both of them go. They lose two good stories in a way. But you know what? It's still really entertaining.
How do they not deal with Glass?
You have no, from beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, you don't know why he's doing this. And they don't pretend to explain it, and it's just a fact. He lied, and you don't really know why. You don't really know his troubles. You don't know if his troubles are real. He's an enigma at the end, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, but the movie needs to have a little bit more depth to make that I didn't learn anything part of it make sense. Why we're watching him. Why is he lying? We don't know. What, to make his parents happy? We never meet the parents. We never really understand if he has any financial ills or if he really needs to be a lawyer. Nothing about it makes sense. But if that's the case, well, then don't have him be the narrator. Don't make it be his flashback, his fantasy at class. It's really confused.
I did not realize that Tom Cruise was involved in this so deeply.
Yeah. What is what matter?
I've decided I don't like this movie so much.
Yeah, it's Tom Cruise, right? You know.
Does it matter why he lied?
It does if he's the narrator. I think
the guy needs to have a last name.
He needs to have a reason for doing this. Otherwise, why are we being fooled for half the movie into maybe he didn't do it? You know, watch the first half of the movie. Kind of puts us in the place of going, well, maybe he is being honest. It's one of those movies that if you went into it completely blind, you wouldn't necessarily know that he was lying.
Well, but I think I've raised a similar issue, to be completely off topic, with Schindler's List. What happens if somebody who has never heard of World War II were to watch Schindler's List? Would they have any understanding of it?
Yeah, that's...
And the answer is,
sure,
of course, no.
Of course, no. But World War II, everyone does. And if not, why are you watching this movie and we don't need to deal with you? This is different, because the New Republic story isn't really big news. It's only big news to people who are in journalism.
So why would you watch this?
The only people who are watching this are New Republic subscribers.
If you like Hayden Christensen, maybe. You know,
who likes Hayden Christensen?
Star Wars geeks.
Nobody likes Hayden Christensen.
Star Wars geeks like him. I think there are a lot of people out there who think Hayden Christensen is cool because he's in the Star Wars movies. They don't know that he's bad in them. You know, they don't really care if they did, I think.
He's cute.
Chloe. What is your opinion on Chloe? Chloe, I'm so hot and cold on. Sometimes I think she's great, and sometimes I think she's just inept. I don't know what to make of her.
What do we just see her in?
She's in the new HBO series here.
Yeah.
And Trees Lounge was also on TV recently.
We just saw her in something else, though. Besides
I don't know. Every once in a while, I think she's just amazing. And then every once in a while, I'm not sure that you... Apparently so.
What?
Is that ever coming out on DVD?
I think it's out on DVD.
Oh, Brown Bunny?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh.
Chloe strikes me as someone who isn't going to try that hard if she's not in something she thinks is good. I think she thinks she's in something good right now, and so she's good in this. And Boys Don't Cry, of course, is great. And the latest Woody Allen movie, she's actually really, really fun in. But I think there are a lot of actors out there who just kind of know that they're in subpar material and then don't try that hard when they know, you know. That's four times as many as we have, Jeff.
It's right. But it's important. I mean, somebody financed this movie, and it was released relatively widely compared to most movies that get made, which means stuff that people do in their backyards and their basements. But
yeah.
It's a movie about a publication with a circulation that is so small and so limited in appeal that it's not really clear why somebody greenlighted the project. To me.
Yeah. Well, because of their notoriety. I mean, they are the official magazine of Air Force One. I mean, always been their claim to fame. I don't know, but that seems like too big a claim to make to fake it for a movie. You know what I mean? It might be.
It's in this flashback that's bullshit, so.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that. I didn't doubt it because it makes sense. I mean, because they are discussed on McNeil Lehrer, and they are discussed on the McLaughlin Group, and they, you know...
Yes,
they,
who watches McNeil Lehrer or the McLaughlin Group?
Besides Mike.
Yeah.
Mike doesn't watch them.
I don't watch them. No. Nobody really.
But there's this insularity of the...
offended the Omnisharm, just by the way.
I don't know, man.
There's an insularity of political power in which the New Republic is big shit, big deal.
Yeah.
But for the... In terms of its commercial appeal as a project, mm-hmm. this has got to rank really, really low. I mean...
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
It was a really big deal, and Jason Blair was a really big deal.
But I think Jason Blair was something people heard about a lot more than this, because people know the New York Times.
Well, unless you're thinking that you're going to make the new All the President's Men, which is not a stupid reason to make a movie, is to say we want to do something kind of politically relevant, and which is entertaining besides. I mean, they go out of their way to make this movie entertaining for the audience. That whole, when did you start talking to George? Oh, it's probably nothing. It's a sitcom line that gets repeated over and over. This is geared for multiplexes. This was made for the mass audience. But nobody really cared, is what happened. I think they thought they were going to make a better movie.
How do you market this for a mass audience?
By getting the critics behind it and saying it's really smart and it's has something to do with how we're living now. It just didn't happen. It's not as smart as it needs to be. It's not as insightful as it needs to be. It's a little bit simplified for a mass audience that didn't come to see it, and that's kind of my biggest problem with it. You know,
your comparison to All the President's Men is bizarre to me, because I don't think All the President's Men is about as dry as a movie can get. I mean, mm-hmm. It's about the mechanics of journalism, and it's really
yep.
fucking boring in a lot of ways.
Ooh,
but
okay.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Conversation.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah,
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just that it treats journalism the nuts and bolts of journalism relatively realistically,
right.
Which fundamentally isn't very interesting.
Absolutely.
And this is a movie that I think you're absolutely right goes out of its way to be entertaining. I do not think this is a movie that wants to be meaningful. I think it's a movie about... it's fundamentally a movie about trust and how somebody who is such a terrible liar, which would be Hayden Christensen and mm-hmm. Stephen Glass,
right.
who's right now in front of his class again, mm-hmm. Basically fools people who should know better, which would be journalists,
right.
into believing bullshit stories that, you know, your mother wouldn't believe for 13 seconds.
Because we found him entertaining is the line Peter Sarsgaard says at the end of the movie.
But that's not true. I don't know.
But it's the line. it's you know, it's what the movie's you're, all about. It's about they liked him, and so they bought his shit.
You're
you
taking
know?
People at their word, and I think that's an error. In a lot of cases.
Yeah, but on movies it's not. That's all we have. We don't know their real lives. We
don't
get to hang
with them. You can intuit things from their behavior that contradicts
sure.
their words, for
yeah,
instance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when something's about lying, essentially, why would you trust anyone?
Yeah, yeah. All right, that makes sense.
I mean, this guy goes out of his way to basically to get... everybody to like him, and it's so transparent, and we have a distance as an audience from it, and you wonder,
right.
why don't they see it? And that's the fundamental question of the movie, is how...
Sure.
And I think if we think of our own lives, we want to believe certain things, and we want to not believe other things. And mm-hmm. I think the movie's point to me is it deals with how it's essentially so easy to fool people.
Yeah, yes, but I think it needs to go into a little bit more about how that actually happens. My biggest problem with the movie comes actually really near the end when they've fired him, when Sarsgaard's character has fired Stephen Glass. And
are you mad at me?
No, why would I be mad at you? At all.
Yay, Hank Azaria.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yay, Hank Azaria.
He's very cute.
He is very cute.
Is when, at the end of the movie, Chloe Sevigny's character says they were fact-checked. They were all fact-checked. She does a big thing. And I'm like, then why the hell didn't you catch it? And we don't find out why they didn't catch it. What facts did you check? If they had looked at that one computer hacker story... If they had looked up one of those addresses, they could have done the work that Steve Zahn did. So they didn't.
Zahn?
I don't know.
Zahn. I've always said
Blah.
Zahn.
It might be. I don't know.
In his only non-Hammy role.
Oh, that's, well, you haven't seen enough.
I'm not going to say a lot during this commentary, but I have to say that one of the things that, besides Yay Hank Azaria, I'll say that a lot, but Yay Hank Azaria, in fact.
Because he's perfect. I love him.
Adorable.
I love him.
But I remember shortly after we saw this movie, I noticed that NPR was saying things in their stories like, and if you'd like to see pictures of the subject of this story, you can go to our website. And I remember thinking that this somehow had to be connected, that they were now providing you pictures of things on their website.
That makes
maybe
sense.
Maybe in an effort to address this for us.
That would make sense.
The issue of fact-checking is really interesting because it's fairly obvious that fact-checking is designed to find minor errors, not gross fabrications.
Right.
And
I guess I just saw all those little bottles and I made a
I go back to what you said about it not really getting into Stephen Glass or not getting into Peter Sarsgaard's character, really understanding them or dealing with them as people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not necessarily a people movie in the sense that it's about specific characters. I think it's about a topic more than it is about these characters, and it's using this as a leaping-off point.
You know, that's fabulous. I agree. I absolutely.
And so I'm not as troubled by the lack of understanding of why Stephen Glass's character is such a liar.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. What you're saying, let me ask, are you saying then that it's more about the topic of kind of journalistic ethics and how can someone, some kind of, you know, anyone, get away with this a lie of this magnitude? Type of thing.
I think it's. I'll even go. What irritates me about movies based on real events is that they don't seem to have a reason for being. They don't have a larger purpose. They have a story,
mm-hmm.
And they want to tell that story. And it might not have a beginning or an end, especially with biopics.
Right.
But this is something that has an agenda that is. We're going to take a real-life story and we're going to use it to talk about something greater. I don't think it's about journalism or journalistic ethics. I think it's about how easy it is to fool people.
Okay, that's fair. That's more than fair. But don't we need some kind of clue as to how they were able to do that besides he was charming? Because I don't find him charming, and I don't think we're meant to. I think we're kind of meant to see him as playing charming, but
might,
not actually
you might,
being
okay,
charming.
If you don't buy him as being charming... Do you essentially buy the conceit of this, which is that somebody like that could pull the wool over so many people's eyes?
Absolutely. I buy the point. Right. I buy the conceit of he is charming to others, and we are not meant to find him that way. But it doesn't jibe with speeches like they were all fact-checked. All they had to do was put juked into a search engine and realize that there is no juked Micronics. Now, how is that story
fact checked? How do you remember that?
Because I've seen this movie a lot. I've seen this movie 6 times.
Okay.
But that's all you have to do is type that in. And when she says they were all fact checked, and she's so adamant about that, and that's kind of her point, is that we did our research. That's where her character comes from. And he goes, they were all fact checked. Well, what can we do? They were lies. I'm like, but you're not explaining what the fact-checking process was that made you miss this fact that this company he wrote about didn't exist.
Yeah.
That is not explained. It's hugely washed over.
Somebody who understands the system, though. The system, if you understand that the premise of the system is to check the details
mm-hmm.
rather than checking the big things.
Fair enough.
I mean, just saw Hank Azaria do that. He called up, he said, can you rent something like that? And they said, oh, you can?
Absolutely. But Stephen Glass was not making up the name of a hotel in that case. In Hack Heaven, he was naming up the name of a company.
But he did that because he knew he could get away with it because he understood what the system was, the fact-checking system.
Okay.
He knew what he could make up and what he couldn't.
Sure, right. But
so
then
he got the detail right. He got certain details right, and then made a whole bunch of shit up.
Yeah, but these fact checkers, then what did they check? I can't understand that. The first place you would go then is to one of these restaurants where it's like, what are your hours? Did you have a convention here? Juke Micronics, find out what their phone number is. Nobody called them. This seems like an insane blunder on the part of the New Republic, who probably didn't fact check any of his shit.
This movie
is making us think that they did. I fully believe that they printed it without checking anything. I would be my guess.
So you think that this is? I guess how much do you think this movie matches up with the reality. Hi, Ginger.
I don't know the reality that well. I saw the 60 Minutes thing I read about on the news. They had the wool pulled over their eyes for years, but I think that probably came down to we trust our writer, and we didn't check his shit as See, well as we should have, and they, you know, they came kind of clean going, yeah, we had a phony, but they didn't really explain why years worth of fact-checking with air quotes happened, and he got away with it.
I'll say that whoever the hairstylist was in this movie with Hayden Christensen, Hank Azaria, and Peter Sarsgaard was very nice. It did a nice job.
Nice job. Guys. Very nice. Very nice. Peter Sarsgaard, I will stare at hairless or whatever. I don't care. I love.
That's why you're freeze-framing Kinsey, right?
Peter Sarsgaard. Oh, God. He's beautiful. He's great. Really. He's amazing. I mean, Jarhead, too. You know, it's, again, you know, he's got no hair. Who cares? Dying Gall. There's a movie. Yeah, it's a good one.
Should be a Kenneth Branagh movie, The Dying Gaul.
It sounds like one, doesn't it?
So you think that you essentially read this movie as being the New Republic's fact-checking system is bullshit. It doesn't actually exist.
I just basically thought of that while I was talking to you right now, but the more I think about it,
I think
I don't know, maybe something did work, but this movie is kind of simplifying things in a way where things don't make sense. Of course, the actual story is that things were fact-checked, and probably, I mean, have you read the New Republic pieces that he wrote, that Stephen Glass wrote? I haven't either. You know, that'd be a great little side project, because maybe none of them have to do with juked Micronics at all, and it's a great, you know, kind of... You know,
so you don't believe that you have a problem with the credibility of this. I mean, let's go back to fact checking.
Sure.
Here's where people are looking at, you know, it's essentially a culture at the New Republic where whether the company actually exists or not is irrelevant so long as your commas are placed properly. You saw that scene.
Yeah.
That's the point of that, is that it's a culture of. A culture of minutia, almost, and that the big picture doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this is
awesome. I love the comma thing. Absolutely. I think it's.
But you're not buying. You're fundamentally not buying that these stories were fact checked at all. If this story remotely,
I don't see how they could be. Okay. In the way that the movie is presenting the story, I don't see how it could be. Chloe is so adamant about how we did all of our work, and Peter Sarsgaard doesn't fight that. He says, yes, you did, and he got it past us. That part of it doesn't make any sense to me. Some key is missing there.
There's nice hair.
All you would have to do is say, juke Micronics, and look it up. And if it doesn't exist, well, now we have a fact-check problem, and now we deal with that. We don't deal with.
If I'm an editor, I almost think
you are an editor, honey.
No, I'm not.
I was going to say thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
I guess my first, if you hire somebody, if you bring them on board, there's a level of trust that you've already established.
Mm-hmm.
And if you write a story and it's about Juke Micronics,
right?
And it's not a local company, I'm going to think, well, who would be stupid enough to make something like that? I mean, I'm not going to think that.
Nope, I'm with you.
It's like, of all the assumptions I'm going to make, this is one of the few scenes you actually get of somebody at home, in a life outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
Except not really, because it's Marty Perez.
But he's at home, unlike everybody else. Even at parties, they're with their coworkers. Sure. You make a lot of assumptions about when you're an editor about what things you're going to focus on. And
right.
Nobody's going to make up the company that's the lead in your story.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can't. Why would you? I mean, it's almost like you wouldn't even bother fact-checking that.
Sure.
But you'd check to make sure that their address was correct. Now, where you're going to get in trouble is where if you put their address in and you can't find the company, then you're going to...
Right.
Then you're going to go do... But then that's where he's making up these crappy fake business cards, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Okay. But what kind... I guess what I'm asking is, what kind of fact-checking in this movie's world could these characters possibly have done about Juked Micronics to not make this look fake?
You're not...
What could they have done?
I look up addresses when I'm doing an editing for, okay. for a local newspaper, I'm looking up addresses.
I should take notes so I can start making shit up. Awesome.
I'm looking up addresses. Well, I'm writing for a national magazine.
I'll be fact-checking you, Mike.
Nobody cares about the address in a national magazine. So,
if I read something in the New Yorker, I am not going to Google the company.
Yeah, absolutely. But the people who publish that article that you're reading in the New Yorker, they are Googling the company. They must. They must. I mean, if this is the New Republic, they need to put Juked into a search engine at this point. I mean, this movie is set at a point where we already have online periodicals, you know.
Yeah,
we need to at least shove that into a search engine.
Why did Hank get fired? I forget.
Because he didn't agree with Marty.
About the commas.
It's kind of a comma thing. It's all very vague. And
I wouldn't understand.
I'm fine with it. I mean, it's one of those things. Whatever. He has to go so Peter Sarsgaard can come in. All right. You take a lot of shortcuts in movies. You have to. There's...
Hi, Hank Azaria.
Yeah, which is too bad because God love him, you know. But we do get Peter Sarsgaard, and man, he's the hero. The thing I love the most about this movie, just because I've been
a hero.
Oh, friend, though he is.
He's you're basically calling him the hero because he realizes something that he should have realized in movie time about 40 or 50 minutes earlier.
And that's how you become a hero, friend, is that you realize that you were stupid and you overcome that and go, now I'm smarter.
Is that why you always call me hero?
I call you hero all the time because you are my hero. The reason that Peter Sarsgaard is a hero is because, that's the point of the movie, for me, the reason I love it so much is because he learned something and he thought he knew it all and he didn't and... You know, and that's why it's like, it drives me mad that he's not the star of this movie, because he's the one doing the journey. He's the one who gets it figured out, you know?
Yeah, sir, I agree with you, certainly, that he is, in a conventional movie sense, this movie is very strange. Even as much as it tries to be entertaining, it's very strange because you would think it would be about either Philip Glass, and I know I got it wrong, I'm kidding.
It's all good.
Stephen Glass or Chuck Lane. Peter Sarsgaard's character. We have beer in the fridge back there, by
Excellent.
The way. So.
Good.
And I was going to go down, and if you need gin, I'm all over.
God. It's the best commentary track ever!
You would think it would be about one or the other, and yet it's almost about the ensemble. It's almost about the New Republic as an organism, as a character, rather than those people. And so it is frustrating in the sense that the things you expect from who's going to move to the forefront or stay in the forefront or be in the forefront from the first frame, it doesn't hold. It's this ever-shifting thing.
Absolutely. The reason I love this so
much... But
that's
a nice thing.
It is. It's great. The reason I love this movie so much, even though I don't really like it that much, is that...
You said earlier, but you don't like it.
I don't. I think it's poorly made. I think it's... And incorrectly made. But it is the most entertaining movie... I've seen it 6-7 times, and I'm not crazy about it. But I love it because it fucks with your perspective. It starts you off on Hayden Christensen's side, and by the end of it, it has a totally different hero. It's one of the very few movies I've ever seen that establishes a hero, and by the end of it, makes that hero the villain, and makes the villain the hero. Not a lot of movies do that, and it's really, it's clever.
Starts out as a villain?
Chuck does, of course, because the only impression we have of him is Hayden Christensen, who we are established to like because we're getting his flashback, his narration. He's our protagonist. And so when he says Chuck Lane is kind of humorless and a dick, and it's Peter Sarsgaard who is playing him as a humorless dick, you're like, oh yeah, he's probably right. You buy into his Glass's lie, you know? Until by the end of the movie, you realize that Glass had it wrong, and Chuck Lane rocks, and you are thrilled to know him. And the reason I don't hate as much as I should that applause for Chuck Lane in the last scene, which is a Norma Ray fucking moment that I should hate, I can't hate it that much because I want to applaud Peter Sarsgaard too, both him as an actor and him as a character. I want to say, yeah, good for you for getting rid of this pissant little piece of shit, you know? It's the movie plays very tricky emotional games on its audience by leading you to think you're going to go down one route, and you go down a completely different route, and by the end, you hate the narrator who got you interested in the story in the first place. It's really smart.
I think you're grossly misreading that applause scene with Chuck Lane at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to me a reflection, almost a visual rhyme, with the scenes of Stephen Glass before his high school class, before the high mm-hmm. school class, where that's a fantasy too. That's Chuck Lane saying, that's Chuck Lane to me thinking, I'm a hero. And that I deserve to be applauded for this courageous thing I did, even though it's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't think...
I think that's
a fantasy element. Yeah, but I don't think that works because... Your interpretation. I don't think your interpretation works because you can't really play those two games simultaneously.
You're just talking about the tricky games this plays.
No, as a movie, and as a movie that's kind of conventionally Hollywood as this one is, I think it's kind of obviously established that the applause for the classroom is phony, and the applause for Chuck is meant seriously. I think we're meant to see one as fantasy and one as reality.
You're welcome to that. I didn't read it that way.
No, that's great. That's absolutely great. I think you're smarter than most audience people, and I think you're smarter than this movie was aiming for. I don't think there's any reason to see that the Peter Sarsgaard stuff is fantasy or his interpretation of being applauded. I don't think the movie gives you any clue that that's even remotely possible.
Except that it's the whole thing's a fantasy. I mean, I think I look at I'm thinking of a specific movie where I'm thinking of I'm thinking of Tucker.
Okay.
In the tone of Tucker, the Francis Ford Coppola movie the automaker with Jeff Bridges. And I'm thinking of it's got this tone of propaganda, this tone of lionization of this putting this character on a pedestal, even though he's, by any account, a complete and total failure.
No.
And I think there's this fantasy bubble around this movie, everything about it, and there's our friend Steve Zahn or Zahn or whatever.
Yeah, he rocks. He's good.
He's also got good hair in this movie.
Whoever
the hairstylist was in the movie did a fantastic job.
He's got bangs.
I think there's this sort of fantasy bubble all throughout this movie, and I think there's this. You talk about it in being these entertaining terms.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that, and yet I think it's this kind of upbeat, you're having fun watching something that's good for you movie. It's all part of a fantasy, and it's all about selling, and it's about making people believe. And here's where Steve is essentially looking at the big picture and doing the fact-checking and doing exactly what you're saying they should do at the New Republic.
Right.
And finding out that the company doesn't exist.
Exactly right, yeah. But
even this, let's listen to the music too, has this kind of upbeat.
Oh, it's very cheesy, playful. It's totally playful.
And I think that's where this fantasy element that I don't think anything in the movie is credible.
Okay. Well, let me just go on record as saying
I'm painting myself into a corner.
No, you're doing fine. But let me really fast say that this is the moment when it picks up for me, and then once Peter Sarsgaard starts figuring things out, it really picks up for me. I think this movie gets incrementally better as it goes along. I'm not saying it gets any more believable, but it certainly gets more entertaining because Steve Zahn is doing what the people at the New Republic should have been doing. So
I'm troubled. I think I'm troubled by the idea that it's not believable. You don't.
No, I don't buy it.
I guess what we're getting to is the point where either you don't believe that this really happened in the sense that the entire premise is bullshit to you, or you think that the movie is not in any way related to the reality of what actually happened.
I think the movie is not being honest about what actually happened because of things like Chloe doing, they were all fact-checked. I think what happened...
Isn't that what people say when they just don't know how something got fucked up?
Yes, but there's no reason to expect that that's... I mean, we have no clue... we have no reason to believe that. This whole thing is It's a Hollywood confection. It's we believe people at their word. There's a difference between All the President's Men and Shattered Glass in that All the President's Men
is... There are
lots
of differences.
Yeah, hell yeah. But it's all kind of boring. And there's nothing boring in this movie. There's always something happening. It's built for multiplex. It's got multiplex spirit, you know? And so when...
But I think that's... I think it, the tone is a reflection of... You talked about how people were charmed by Stephen Glass.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is being, in its own way, tonally, it is being Stephen Glass. It is trying to charm you with something that should bore the shit out of you, which is the subject of journalism and fact-checking.
Yeah, God,
so I think
true.
Its tone, I think in its tone then, it's really sophisticated and doing something that's, you talk about it being poorly made, I think for that reason that it's really well made. Because it's in a way that most people would never realize it is being just like Stephen Glass. It's selling itself to you, even though it might not be remotely credible.
Yeah, I think...
And it shouldn't be remotely credible.
I think your analysis of the movie is way more trenchant than anything this movie has to offer. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I do.
I disagree with you, but...
I really think it's cutting short its story. There's a story that's here that they're not getting at.
There are lots of stories that are here. They're pushing to tell this one.
Exactly. But
and they're pushing to tell it in this way.
Yeah, but there is... We can't just buy that he got... I think he did get away with it on Charm. I think Charm...
I agree with you.
I think Charm got him through. I think this movie would be better if they admitted that they didn't even bother to check his shit.
Okay.
Because that's a more interesting story. It really is. It's like saying we trust our writers. As well you should. If they're as personable as he is and as a good writer as he is, maybe you just let it slide. But
I think the system,
you know,
I think the system is... We all have systems.
Yeah.
If you thought, if I trusted you and hired you, and I'm sure you fantasize every night when you go to bed of all the shit that you could get away with if you wanted to.
All I do every night before I go to bed is fantasize about The Office, babe.
Not me.
That's all I do. Yeah. Jeff in The Office. That's all it is. Yeah.
I understand completely. I do the same thing about me in The Office.
Right. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Anyway, so...
Chloe is one of the strangest looking women to have success, have a Hollywood career. She has a big nose, relatively speaking, for a woman in Hollywood.
Yeah.
In this movie, she doesn't have a lot of vanity. She's
She's often really good.
I love
Last
her.
Days of Disco is the one where I wasn't sure.
It's not Sloane Whitman, is it?
Yeah. It was the first thing I saw her in, and I wasn't sure how to take her.
Is it Whit Stillman or
Whit Stillman or Slim Whitman?
Or
they're
Slim
all cowboy
Dickens.
Stars to me. She's. I think she's great. I think she's
we didn't
great.
Like Crash.
But
I didn't like Crash. Mike did.
I was just crashing into.
Oh, thanks, Pumpkin.
Appreciate that. water.
There's. Yeah. This movie is really. It's so high on the ethics of journalism in a really snobby way that reeks of bullshit to me. We can kind of ignore things like them applauding, chuckling, but we have to deal with the fact that they're not checking his shit.
I think you have to remember that this is a little pissant magazine compared to the New York Times, which got fooled by Jason Blair. And the New York Times has a fact-checking department that's as big as this magazine's entire staff.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what, friend? They're still human. They're still human, like these people are. That are like, we're not going to check his stuff. He's so sweet and he gets us gum.
I think they did check his stuff. They really did. And he has a big lightsaber.
Well, please explain. Please explain things like Hack Heaven as this movie lays it out. How do you not check juked micronics if you're a fact
checker?
Because
nobody's stupid enough to fake, to make up the subject of their story.
Well, what did they check then? So you're saying, which might be very valid, you just checked the address. Juked is at this address, and this. But beyond that, what do you have? These executives
they talk
about
this
don't exist.
They talk about this. What is,
Is this for me?
That's your water.
Oh, thank you.
I think.
You're welcome. Yes.
Awesome. I should have that.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. I agree that if I had the story in front of me, I think I would have at least raised the question of, well, I can't find this company ever anywhere, and if assuming that they're an electronics company, you would think they would have a website.
Right.
I think I would catch that. But I'm at least willing to suspend my disbelief to think that...
But if Mike came to you with a story, don't you trust him?
Oh, I know you totally think I'm glass, just so you know. Let's stop beating around the bush. I mean, really. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I look like him a little bit, and I am that personable, and... Seriously, there's a lot of similarities.
The reason I think that comparison keeps coming up is because the movie is fundamentally about Stephen Glass and his editor, and here you are, you're a writer, and I'm the person who edits your stuff.
But our personalities are a lot alike. I'm sorry. Don't you agree? I mean, I see this movie, and I'm like, well, that's me. I make Lib happy by saying, "Oh, yeah, Lib, you're so sexy today."
Stephen, 78. Stephen Glass is.
She better not download this.
Yeah,
Stephen Glass.
She'd love that.
Is
she's 76? Lib, you're 76.
Stephen Glass is operating out of desperation a lot of times, and out of very.
I look like I go to 76.
Very passive aggressive bullshit. You know that kind of. Are you mad at me? Which is just, you're putting people on the defensive and making people say, oh, no, I'm not mad at you, even if they are, but feeling like you're going to go jump off a bridge if they say that they are mad at you.
Yeah.
And he's manipulating, he's very needy.
He says, I don't know why they'll have such a hard time finding it. Here's their website.
No, it's all, this part is all believable. It's just, it's the minutia of it that, that I don't buy. That they don't explain. That, I think in this
story, what's the standard?
You have to explain.
What's the standard? Because you will go to, Underworld Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And buy that there are vampires flying around and shit like that.
Absolutely.
And yet we're questioning about whether...
Okay.
I'm asking the question facetiously, but I'm also asking it seriously. What forces us to amp up our expectations for accuracy?
And self-seriousness. Self-seriousness.
Except this isn't a self-serious movie. This is
An opening crawl in black and white in that type, in typewriter type... In 1998, Courier. Thank you.
But
in 1998,
no.
These are all subtle hints from a filmmaker. These are all things they do intentionally.
Agreed.
They pick that type for a reason. They put that crawl. That screenplay says things like the average age was 26 for a reason. That's not there for nothing. It's there because they want us to soak that in, and that means something.
I want to stop you for a second.
Please.
This is in here because, to go back to your question, well, they didn't fact check this. Stephen Glass was prepared to, whenever the issue came up, to essentially turn on this backup mechanism so that when anybody ever questioned the existence of Juke Mictronics, which he knew he made up and knew he was probably going to get caught on, he would create a phone number for him.
Fabulous.
So whether they fact check it or not, at some point this mechanism would kick in. He'd produce a business card, there'd be a phone number, whatever, so that any rudimentary check would produce...
would get this result, and that's all you would do as a fact checker. Be like, "Good, they answered Juke Mictronics. I'm fine."
So, I'm just saying that. But now it's going back to your point, the self-seriousness. I agree with you, and yet you were saying you were giving me more credit than the movie filmmakers by saying my reading was more trenchant than anything they have to say.
Yeah.
If the font is meaningful to them, then they've thought of everything I'm saying, and they're. Do you get what I'm getting?
Yeah, but not necessarily, Jeff. I mean,
This is the third time we've seen him at home, which is really interesting because you haven't seen
him. Third time?
Yeah, this is the third time you've seen him at home.
Because he's the hero. They're subtly telling you he's the hero.
But it's
of the
an interesting. It's very subtle. You know? It's subtle. It's very
interesting. Incredible. It's my favorite thing about this movie is his home life. Is that because we don't ever see Glass at home.
Now you did what you saw him in concert with Chuck Lane at home, but it was just a short shot where he's just lying there.
All right, that's fair. But all of a sudden, you're rooting for this guy that was kind of set up
because,
as the villain.
Because he has a baby and a wife?
No, because you get to see him at home. And it's not cute because the baby's sick. You know, it's not he has a wife and a baby and everything's great. He has a wife, but his baby's sick. That's a really telling detail, a really nice detail, that life is trickier than you think it's going to be. He's not man with wife and kid. He's got a wife and his kid's sick, and he's worried about that. And it's subtly turning him into the hero without you even noticing it. This movie is really dexterous that way. It's really smart. It makes up for a lot of its faults by being so smart about character for him, about and how it turns you into. How it turns the movie into being his story without you realizing it. It's not as good as it needs to be, but it does something that's really smart. That's
you've just seen one of the ways that Stephen Glass was really clever, in the sense that he's essentially being preemptive about the fact-checking, and that he's having his brother or somebody call his boss.
Yeah,
basically not verifying anything, but making essentially a credible call about that would essentially allay any concerns about the accuracy of something.
You bet. Absolutely.
So this is the fourth time we see him at home.
The same night, though.
Yes.
He's got good hair.
Even in bed.
Fucking Peter Sarsgaard. God damn.
But you don't get to see his penis in this movie, right?
It's one of the rare movies we don't. No. Dying Gall. Tell you.
Penis time?
No, not really, but sex with men, so that's fine. You know, it's basically the same.
Essentially, we have seen the first instance of the wedding ring rule. The wedding ring rule says that anytime you see anyone's wedding ring, especially the way light glints off it, you're dealing with issues of infidelity or the stability of the marriage.
But we're not in this movie.
It's a violation of the wedding ring rule.
So your wedding ring rule is like
stupid. No, this is like the this is like
your
one,
first
this
example. Is like, this doesn't is
like,
work.
This is like one out of a thousand times it doesn't work.
Okay, whatever.
He's right. It's
you see wedding rings, it's meaningful.
Yeah, okay, but your first example of that is not.
Well, this is the first comment. No, it's just showing how clever and subversive the filmmakers
you're right.
are.
You're absolutely right.
Look at that font. That font says that we ought to be taking this seriously.
Yeah, it does. You bet it does. Don't think
now,
it does.
Now, what about
doesn't?
That serif font right there in the
no,
New Republic?
That
War.
Didn't count, but you know I'm right on that. That's why you're pissed. Yeah. Sure. I'm feeling really attacked, Chuck. I had to do my Now, part of this really works in the context of the time. This would have been, what, 98, I think it starts in?
Well, that was May 8th, 98, that they just showed.
Right, okay. Although it is still weird to think that the editor of the New Republic is that, is as computer retarded as, you know. Because I don't know anything. Yeah. But
there's a photo of a dog right behind Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah. Yes, and is it a dog you know?
We've never seen Stephen Glass with a dog, and yet he's got a photo of a dog.
What's with the girlfriend? At the beginning of the movie, that woman with the Avon shit says, for your girlfriend. Are we to think that he has one?
Well, and then he says, everybody thinks I'm gay, and I need to quit complimenting her on her lipstick, because that makes people think I'm gay more.
Yeah.
And then there's the Diet Coke thing. When she says, I said that 2 years ago, and of course any woman in the world is going to say, and you remembered something from 2 years ago?
There's a whole lot of extraneous Glass detail that is never dealt with. I mean, but the Avon lady at the beginning says, for your girlfriend. you know, when she's like trying to shuck off her merchandise, and
I
it's
think
like,
that's,
I don't. Does he have one? Do we? You know.
I think that's just an assumption. That I think that's a sales technique.
Okay. All right.
I'm cool with that.
Okay. That's fine. But again, we have very little understanding of his romantic life, except that he made out with a guy. That's really all we know about his romantic life.
And that he's totally freakily obsessed with how somebody drinks their Diet Coke.
Yeah, yeah. He's, well, that's a gay thing, to be honest. Yeah.
What, being freakily obsessed?
No, remembering what girls like and putting that out there later to show that you remembered how...
Like girls?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. It's a trick.
Who likes girls?
I hope you do, at least
one. When did we get the silly string out? That's awesome.
What silly string?
No, it sounds like silly string. That
that must have been my wife.
Huh. That was Hey-o. Definitely not me.
All right.
Hey, I'd admit it, even if it were to be downloaded later. No, that was probably the refrigerator.
It was the refrigerator.
I heard a fart noise, and I was all happy about that.
You're having some issues?
Bench warmers.
There's a thing right there, honey.
By thing we were referring
this
to
is
a
where,
beer wetsuit.
This is where...
A Red Sox beer wetsuit.
This is where I start loving the movie beyond belief. I think the last 40 minutes of this movie are amazing. I love this movie. I love this movie, but I don't like it. Does that make sense?
You're so weird.
I'm the opposite. I really like this movie, and I really enjoy it. I don't love it, and it doesn't incite passion in me. And yet, you will talk about all its problems, and I will defend it against those things, and yet you will say how much you love it, and I will say, well, it's not all that shit.
Well, love is hard to explain, my friend. I really do. I love this movie. I love it. Because in my head, it's a different movie, I guess. I don't know. It's so entertaining. It's doing everything wrong, and it's so entertaining.
You seem to be... And I do the same thing, but sometimes I think, I'm not going to... A lot of times I don't do this, but sometimes I say, I'm not going to tell you what I think this movie ought to have been, or how it could be better, but I'm going to talk about what it is. And you seem to love it for what it is, and yet hate it for what it isn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think sometimes you just have to take the text, and I am completely disingenuous in this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes you just have to take the text and say, let's not talk about what it should have been or could have been, but what it is.
Sure, yeah.
And you say, you admit that it's hugely entertaining.
Yeah. It's also hugely flawed. I mean, it's, in my opinion, it is. But movies are hard, man. I mean, the movies that you love the most are never perfect movies. They've got problems.
I disagree
you all know
with that.
Them.
I think the movies that I love, I think, are perfect.
Really?
I think
honest to God?
I think Magnolia's... Obviously, you could quibble with moments, with choices, but fundamentally, they're structurally sound. What I mean is, there might be a scratch or something on the wall that's a little wrong, but fundamentally, it's as close to perfect as you can expect from something that's so collaborative and so it involves so many different variables.
Okay.
I think Magnolia fundamentally is perfect. I think Calendar's fundamentally perfect. I think Memento is fundamentally perfect. I think The Truman Show is fundamentally perfect. I'm going with movies that are in my top 10.
Yeah.
I think these are movies that are as close to perfect, not in the Citizen Kane or the Kurosawa way, but
they work for me
in virtually every way.
Okay.
So I don't think something has to be flawed for you to love it.
I am too much of a Pauline Kael fan, really, I think, to get on board with that because I'm fully of the mind that you can love things all the more for not being perfect.
I agree with that.
For being fucked up.
But it's not a requirement.
No, it's not a requirement at all. I just...
But I agree with what you're saying. You can love them in spite of the fact they're not perfect. I think I can say that Fearless for me is very much a movie that is not perfect or necessarily very good that I love, and I can explain why I love it, but it's...
Now you can.
It makes me cry like crazy. Fearless makes me cry 3 or 4 times during the run of that movie. Things that shouldn't be that emotional, but kind of are. They work in that way where it's, you know... Did you cry at Fearless? I'm not sure what you're
well,
saying.
Well, Fearless...
Have you read it? Have you read the piece? On Culture Snob?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, Fearless makes me bawl every time I see it, and I don't even watch... I mean, I think it's flawed enough that I don't even watch the first 90 minutes of it. I pick up as soon as he, as soon as Tom Hulce comes and knocks on the door with the flowers and the strawberries, and it's that last half hour, there's a single piece of music basically going under the last 25 minutes that's, and he's walking toward the light and all that bullshit. But that is that's where it's a very emotional experience for me.
Okay. All right.
That and the last half hour of Babe, and I'm not, you think I'm being funny? I'm
no,
not.
I don't.
The last half hour of Babe is, it makes me bawl every time.
I'm the last one who will ever make fun of you for that. Shit. Please. You're my editor. He's supposed to support me.
Now look at this point, look at how pale he looks and how he's got this kind of flop sweat. His hair's kind of greasy and it's... He's kind of coming apart at that point.
Yeah, yeah. It's good makeup. It's good makeup.
Completely off the record and really almost human being.
If editors are capable of that.
You guys have discovered something.
Editors suck.
No, as lawyers.
No, you don't.
Editors, lawyers, and theater critics.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So who's drinking? Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
What would be the... ultimate shattered glass drinking game. What would make you drink? Off the record. The phrase off the record.
Well, one of them would be, it's probably nothing, but you'd only get 3 drinks on that, because 3 is
I'm
fine.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry is good.
Are you mad at me?
Are you mad at me? Chuck! Every time he says, Chuck!
The word journalist.
Fucking journalist.
Every time they kind of... blow themselves up to be cooler than they should. There's a lot of.
Look at the acne scars on him. Peter Sarsgaard does not have a good complexion.
God, he's sexy. Shit.
But he is. Oh. Look at his cheek. He's not.
I know. No, it's.
He's no. Not yeah. Emilio Estevez. Just the guy with the
Edward James Olmos.
You guys are hard.
But.
You guys are hard, man.
Yeah. Nah, sorry.
I get those two confused so often.
Emilio Estevez and Edward James Olmos.
Are you kidding? Really?
Yes, I'm kidding. But
come for the love of God.
It's the 42-inch TV. You'd never notice otherwise.
What about? Let's do it. We need to take track to Bethesda.
And who wouldn't say yes to that?
Well, an inveterate liar, I guess. That's
oh, okay.
But that's it. But beyond that, no.
That's
I'm
a really
there.
Interesting composition.
Yep.
Where
are we? Chloe?
Well, where you've got the line between them, and you've got those two people in the background looking. And this—it's really the word production right between them. It's like there's a barrier that line.
Yeah, and look at her trying to sneak through to get to see it. Yeah, she's leaning over. It's that.
And yet she's pretending not to look.
Right. Brilliant. It's nice. This movie gets better and better as it goes on. Really, I.
We were talking about makeup before. You just saw Chloe where she got like 2 or 3 layers of bags under her eyes.
I didn't see that. I'm sorry.
No, but I think it's really... you usually see makeup that makes people look perfect or that makes them look like total shit.
Right.
you rarely see makeup that makes them look like real people.
She might not have had any makeup on. Maybe.
But I think you so rarely see that. I mean, look at, you just saw the father and his kid, mm-hmm. and they both look like real people.
Yep.
Look at the way his shirt is wrinkled. It's not wrinkled in a homeless person way, or it's not pressed like you'd see in a typical way. It's like the shirt of a journalist, and that's that mm-hmm. attention to detail that I, and the fact that he washed it and it's clean, but he didn't iron it. I think there's an attention to detail
that's
that
nice.
I really like.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't take it out of the dryer at 10 minutes and flap it.
Well, even my shirts probably look like his shirts, but I don't iron my shirts. And the fact that he's got that second button unbuttoned, and the way Peter Sarsgaard's tie, and the way he's got a corduroy coat, those are, I think those details mm-hmm. feel real.
Absolutely.
And who doesn't know an editor with a corduroy coat?
Me. You have one?
This movie is really good on detail.
But you believe, you know, Peter Sarsgaard has a corduroy coat.
Oh, that was my favorite moment. Shit, it came too fast.
What was it?
When the guy at the desk says, "Can I help you?" And he goes, "Yes, you can." It's a brilliant line reading. It's a really good line reading. It's a reading that says, "I'm already over this. I know what I know. You need to verify it, you know? Yes, you can. I already know what I know. Just tell me what I need to hear." It's brilliant. It's such a smart actor reading. Oh, God.
And look at the acting here where...
Yeah.
But look at...
He's all glowery.
That he's angry and... If he would have tapped into that for any of the Star Wars movies...
Yeah.
I think... he couldn't have rescued those movies, but there's certainly a level of subtlety and of nuance in this performance right here.
Fuck. If you watch the Star Wars movies, dude, you would never know that he's talented or that Natalie Portman was talented or that Sam Jackson was talented.
Or that Ewan McGregor.
Fuck! Ewan McGregor is like God's gift to movies, and you'd never know it from... fucking George Lucas. Fuck you, George Lucas! Sorry.
I got fooled. You won't get any disagreement in this room.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh.
Look at the bags. He's got two sets of bags under his eyes right
Peter
there.
Peter Sarsgaard is so sad right now because he's been duped. He's letting you read all of his sadness and his... I just want this.
What the fuck?
I know I'm stupid is what is reading on his face.
But
I know I'm stupid.
What's so nice, too, is that I think there's a truth here about... He's not upset about where his career's going at this point. He's upset at himself, and he's upset, and he's disappointed. And he's not self-interested at this point. He's angry about ethical things and about important things, and he's not caught up in, oh, shit.
No.
Am I going to get fired?
Right. But it's kind of self-interested because it's, I can't believe I was that dumb.
It is, but it's not a really base thing. I mean, we expect people to act really basely in this way.
You're my editor. Okay. You're supposed to support me. Sorry.
Yeah, Chuck.
You're supposed to support me.
Chuck.
Look who's driving here. Is that important? Look at those expressions.
Nah, he needs to drive so that Peter Sarsgaard can say, "Pull over."
They both look like they've been sweating at this point. They've got this look of... Well, right now, it's sort of being pitched as a married couple. "I'm sorry I yelled at you."
All right.
I mean... When I was talking about how this is a movie about how you get... I mean, that's a married couple thing right there.
Wait a minute. I don't know.
No, no, well, I mean, you know, backseat driver type thing. That's a married couple. I was talking about how this is about how...
I just close my lips and hold the armrest really tight.
How you want to believe people, how you want to believe people, and how you trust them, and you just... And this is... all about the interpersonal rather than the professional relationship. And against all of the fact-checking, against all the stuff that says you shouldn't believe this person, you do.
Mm-hmm.
there was that shot from the in front of the windshield where the two of them were together and they weren't looking at each other and he turned the radio on and he turned it off. That's like a couple. I mean, that's,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's, and maybe it's best friends. It doesn't have to be a romantic thing. It's not, it's just,
either way, it's
not
it's
about a
closeness.
Professional thing. It's, yes, yes.
There's an intimacy of it.
Right.
Yes.
There's an intimacy. Okay.
And it's a very, and it's a very personal.
We mentioned drunken commentary track.
Yeah. No, but we talked about when, how he was disappointed as a person rather than as a journalist. I think it plays into that. That it's a very personal disappointment. It's a failure of judgment. Yeah. He didn't even hire this guy. He was he's the hired gun brought in after the editor got fired. So he didn't really have a role in bringing Stephen Glass on here.
And he's looking at this as a personal. He didn't even like him that much.
No, and,
you know, really.
Commentary tracks suck. I have to pee.
It's like, we're so close. No,
we got
so
half
close.
An hour left.
I thought we stop it then.
No, nah, we'll make it.
No, we'll be fine. No, no, fuck it. This is the first chance. Yeah.
That's why it's digital. It's all
I assume that's
fucking
a lawyer.
Peter Sarsgaard. I mean,
is that a lawyer?
No, he's been here before.
Who is he? Is he a lawyer?
No.
He's got lawyer hair.
I beg your pardon.
Now, compared to all the good hair, I mean, I'm not. I don't mean. There's a lot of good hair in this movie, and for a guy.
No, he was in the staff meeting earlier.
Honey, you're a little obsessed with the hair thing.
I am so
you
know,
I'm just saying,
hair,
your hair is amazing. Your hair is great.
No, I don't. I'm interested.
I don't understand.
I'm really interested in the hair in this movie. I usually don't look at hair in the movie, but I'm interested in the hair in this movie. I think it's important, and I'm not
you
kidding.
You did a whole fucking article about hair, and you know.
When did I do an article about hair?
Jeff Bridges. Tim Robbins.
Yeah. Oh, that wasn't really about hair.
Okay.
He does have a hair thing, though.
I do have
You've
a hair thing.
You've got a bit of a hair thing. It's all right if you do. I'm just
and
saying.
This new
hey, you two can talk among each other. I'm going to go pee.
All right.
I have to say, his hair is much better. I loved it before, but now it's
Jeff's
really
hair
great.
Jeff's hair rocks. What's
awesome?
His problem?
I don't know.
I would kill for the hair.
I know. I don't know. He doesn't
have I'm at that place right now where I've got, like, way too much hair for the goo.
You don't have any hair.
Oh, I've got... No, really. This is gooed down beyond belief. So...
I was thinking it looked nice.
No, thank you. It does. I agree, but it's... I've got more hair than yet. Hey-o. See this bullshit, Pamela. I don't think he'll survive. Where does that come from?
Because he has batted his eyelashes, but and he has had this relationship with all these women, and he interacts with them, and he says, hey, that lipstick is the bomb, and hey, and oh,
yeah.
I remember what Diet Coke you drink, and oh, and he's had this relationship with all these women, and he suckers them all. And so she's stepping into
the... Quit talking about me!
Do you agree that that is not out there enough to make that make sense?
No, I get that. I totally get that.
All right.
I've done that.
Okay.
But he has this relationship with women that, and it's not you, hon.
I'm not seeing that. I'm not.
But maybe it's.
I'm not feeling that. Maybe it's the sitcom that bothers me. It's the, when did you start talking to George? Oh, it's probably nothing. Three times in a row. It's sitcom dialogue. You know, it's.
But I think when she says, he won't survive. It's indicative of the relationship that he's established with her. We don't have to see it to understand that he's related to the
sure.
cosmetic sales lady, yeah. Avon lady,
okay.
and then the Diet Coke lady, and now her. He schmoozes every woman that he comes in contact with.
But he's
wow. every man.
He schmoozes everyone, I was going to say.
And I'm willing
no,
to buy.
No, that's fabulous. All right. Thank you.
I totally am willing to buy that he has had this relationship with
yeah.
her, that she feels like, oh, I have to protect him because he taps into whatever it is that
that's
she wants
good.
Of him.
That's good.
And gives it to her.
Thank you.
Hey.
All right.
Hank. Hello, Hank.
No flipping. Oh, wait, that's different.
That works. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And
seriously,
it.
Pamela, that works. That makes sense. I never thought about it that way. That's nice.
Yes,
all right.
Good chick.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Most movies I see, it's like, you have to be a gay man.
Oh.
So this is nice.
So
all right,
out.
Good. Okay, good. All right.
So next time we'll watch Moulin Rouge and you can enlighten me.
No.
You like Moulin Rouge.
I love Moulin Rouge. I'm just
Brokeback.
Okay.
You watch it first, but then we'll watch it again together.
That will get downloaded. You know,
well, that movie is important. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Character dead now. Yeah. Died. The character he's playing died in, what was it, Iraq?
Like
it's
Kelly?
A crawl. It's a crawl at the end of the movie.
Okay.
They
tell you that he died. What a face. Hank Azaria, are you kidding?
And yet he's most known for his voice.
Mm.
Because he's one of the Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah. But
he plays Marge, right?
But look at that. Yeah. Oh, that
he's
face.
A Boo and...
God, there's... Mm.
No, I think he's extraordinary. I love
him.
Wow.
It's all about honesty.
He doesn't get much work, though.
I admit, even in The Birdcage, I love him. It's a horrible, horrible movie, but...
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Seen it.
No, it's in my top 25.
It's appalling.
No, it's not. It's joyous. If you were gay, you would see it as joyous.
Because I think of it, and I look at it, and I think, if I were gay, I would be so offended.
No. Just check it home again.
No, if you were gay, you would go, this is joyous.
Good, I'm glad, because it seems horrifically offensive to me.
No. No, every gay man I know loves The Birdcage, and I love The Birdcage.
Okay.
It's really good. It seems offensive, and it's not. It's celebratory.
All right.
Even though it's got Robin Williams and Nathan Lane in it.
Oh, no, it's joyous.
I've never seen it.
And Hank Azaria in really incredibly short shorts playing a maid.
I wish I could tell you how beautiful it really is. It's almost embarrassing how much you love it.
That's okay.
Do you own it on DVD?
Oh, yeah.
So the next commentary track could be The Birdcage?
Birdcage.
Even though I've never seen it.
All right. That's fair.
I would love it.
Because because it's both.
Because then you can explain it to me. Because
we'll also explain Mike Nichols to you, which I don't think either of you get. Mike Nichols,
the asshole who ruined Angels in America.
No, the
Mike
one who
Nichols.
Made Angels in America better than it was before.
Never.
Hey,
we're gonna
kids,
watch that.
Kids, we're not getting into this fight now.
crap. Okay.
I'm on her side anyway.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm excited.
I'll also give you. I'll also tell you how much I hate. I'll also tell you how much I hate Graduate. So
I like The Graduate.
That's right. No, you can hate The Graduate all you want.
I like The Graduate. Those are all real
people. Look me in the eye and tell me.
Those are all real people.
Files, okay? I have to put them on a disc. No, they're mine. Personal stuff. I don't care.
Do you see that? There's a sense that they're almost the way they're made up and the way they're cast is almost to make him look like his younger brother.
Well, they got.
I see a physical similarity that suggests, and going back to that intimacy thing, that. It's almost a fraternal relationship rather than a...
I'd say that if there was anything in the script to make me think that there should be one, but there's nothing to suggest that they're brothers under the skin in the script. Cosmetics,
at best, I think. But, I mean, that's not a whole lot different than saying, well, I'm related by blood, but we have nothing in common. I mean, it just seems to me that there's a similar look to them that's interesting to me.
I would say that's accidental, to be honest. That's my take. I think it's...
And what hair?
We've been through this already.
I know.
Yours, Mike's.
I know.
We haven't even talked about mine yet.
You have wonderful hair.
Your hair is awesome.
Kurt courtesy of El Shaddai.
Chuck.
Product placement in the commentary track.
Excellent. El Shaddai. You could do a Happy Gilmore movie. Yes.
Raymond Banks.
That dinner at the San Francisco Oven was fantastic last night, honey.
Boy, Rachel Ray sure knows how to give us those 30-minute meals.
Best Buy had some fantastic service today.
God, I love Peter Sarsgaard. God, he's good. Man.
And for the longest time, every time I saw him, I'd say,
When I see those magazine covers like that, the word that comes to my mind is vanity, and I'm not sure why. But since I'm so fixated on hair, I think the word vanity is kind of weird in the sense of in the context of this movie, because it's you talked about it being the Air Force One. The magazine of Air Force One,
In-flight
magazine of Air Force One.
Yeah.
There's a level. I can't articulate it, but vanity seems to be important in this movie.
Of course, but dude, they have the money to do that. They're four times bigger than the Reader. We have our little fucking.
But they're a national magazine, though.
Well, four times bigger than the Reader doesn't mean very much, dude.
If we had four times our budget, we would display our covers, and you know we would. You know we would. Some of them are really
good. That's not what I'm talking about.
It's exactly what you're talking about. You're looking at that image of kind of look at what we've done, kind of gloating.
I mean,
he's
ripping apart the vanity. He's basically that is wall of pride, and here he is basically saying, "Fuck it, this is all bullshit."
And you betcha, and you would do the same thing if you were Chuck Lane in this situation, right.
Less about truth than it is about vanity and how it looks to the public. And I was talking before about how he was asking important, real questions rather than thinking about himself. That seems to me to be about image perception, and he seems to have essentially receded into a point where he's gone to vanity and gone to professional reputation versus what's right and what's wrong, when he was talking to him earlier and being offended that he'd been violated a personal relationship.
Okay, so you're saying he's going into a vanity place right now?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Wow, really?
Yes.
Okay.
He's tearing down the face of the paper. He's ripping it off half the face of the publication, essentially.
But how is that vanity to you, as opposed to anti-vanity?
It's the
opposite of vanity. Now he's restoring them.
What do you make of that? He's putting them back.
But maybe it's not. Maybe vanity is the wrong word. Maybe it's before he was reacting on a personal level, a level of personal offense.
Okay.
Now he's reacting on a professional level, and professional image and credibility, which are important things, versus personal trust. I just see the scene as. It's a context of being out in the open where they were having a confrontation that was between them rather than... And here, you've got the BLIC of the New Republic back there, and you've got this wall of covers. It's in a professional context, and it's a completely different meaning.
Well, okay, that's fair.
He's putting them back.
He's putting them back, I think, is important.
I will argue that in this movie, Chuck Lane and Sarsgaard's performance as him has no personal relevance to Glass at all.
It's all professional.
It's all Zionism, professional.
Zionism at 100. Who hasn't thought of that as...
It's,
But the one he has his hand on in that shot is Badge of Dishonor.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Good observation. Good catch.
Nice catch. Well done.
Versus Robespierre of the Right...
Robespierre.
Lie about something.
This movie is so clever. It's so smart. And, construction-wise, it's really well put together as far as...
I love the idea that you love the movie and dislike it. and
absolutely
find great fault with it.
Oh, Jeffrey, it's so... I think it's so the wrong presentation for the material, but what it's doing is fascinating. God, they're playing tricks with the narrative in ways that movies shouldn't do. It's wow, you know? At the you know, we... It starts as Glass's story, and then it becomes Chuck Lane's story, but it turns back into Glass's story at the end, where it's this fantasy, and but now we understand it's a fantasy. I think it's so smart. Wow.
I think it's interesting. It's interesting you just said that, because when I think back about Jason Blair, it's Jason Blair's story, because that's the only name people are going to remember. Nobody's going to remember
the editor's
name. It's always going to be the liar's name, the guy who, you know. And so I think it's really interesting that you put it in that context, because fundamentally this will always be Stephen Glass's story.
But it, yeah, right. But it isn't. It's
no, but that, know, it's very.
It's
very
Chuck Lane's story.
It's interesting, and I think maybe that tension is expressed in the movie in the way there's this back and forth.
Yeah. See, now, like, right now, I'm not sure what the movie wants us to think. I can't figure it out.
But then, I could be misremembering, but isn't the classroom just empty out, like, soon?
Yeah. But what is the point of this flashback structure?
When you include Hack Heaven, which has been the discussion all the way around, when you include Hack Heaven and he nods and nobody challenges him at all, I think at that point it's very clear that it's fantasy.
Yeah, of course. But what is the point of showing us the fantasy? I don't understand
because he looks at himself as a martyr. He thinks he's been wronged.
But why is that the crux for an audience? Why is it a paying $8.75 audience member?
No, nobody paid $8.75 for this movie because nobody saw it.
You're killing me.
But you know it's true.
Why?
You know it's true.
I do. But why on earth are we then expected to side with him?
You're not expected to side with him. You're expected to see him as delusional, as Pamela
from
says.
The start?
No. You're supposed to recognize him as delusional by the end. I mean, Egoyan is, not to go back into Egoyan, but Egoyan is excellent at presenting you with a situation and that's intentionally confusing and troubling and weird, and then essentially filling in the details and help showing you something very similar at the end and saying, now look at how differently it is, how different it looks to you now that you've seen the whole story or seen more of the story.
Yes.
I think that's true here. At the beginning, you're not supposed to know what to make of it.
Yeah. But this is not a going. This is Hollywood pap. This is...
It's not Hollywood pap. Nobody
that is. Would. Oh, I'm sorry. That was mean. I'm sorry.
No. I didn't mean to do that. I guess there are three of us. Three sentient beings.
beings. Sorry, that was really rude. I apologize.
Three sentient beings. What do you think? Do you think this is Hollywood pap, or do you think it's something more than that?
I don't think enough people saw it to make it Hollywood pap, but I know that's not the criterion. I understand that. I think it's smarter than that. I think.
So you lose.
Sorry, I think Transformers is Hollywood
good.
Pap.
No, it's all good.
I think. No, I.
You have leverage over her though, so.
No. Whatever.
Oh yeah, I just, you think you do.
No, I look at this and I'm like.
I told her if she agrees with me, she never has to touch me again.
Yeah, right.
I know this could be smarter, and it drives me nuts that it's not.
I don't
smarter.
Want it to be. I don't want it to be smarter.
I'm not sure I do either, Jeff. I'm just saying that it could be.
Yes, it could be, but I don't want Egoyan out of this story, and that's what I mean. I guess that's what you're asking the story. Not you seem to want this to turn into something to be very serious, self-serious, sober, and you're gonna jump all over this and unentertaining.
Why? Because I'm like on my knees, like right.
Because you hate Egoyan outside of the Sweet Hereafter. Egoyan would turn
that moment. I have to say,
I do too.
I love that moment.
It's my favorite moment in the movie.
You dumbasses! You could have solved this.
Pictures.
I
little redesign. You're all good.
Yep.
Sorry.
I love Adam Egoyan, and yet I don't want this movie to be shepherded by Adam Egoyan. Just as I mean, I think the example is that where the truth lies is an example of Adam McGoyan taking over the story. Tonally, it's all wrong, and it's self-serious, and there's none of the playfulness. And I think this movie, you say the movie needed to be more. I think this movie is exactly what it ought to be. And I think its irreverence and its lack of seriousness speaks fundamentally to the corduroyness of his jacket. speaks to the transience of the media, that when we publish a bad issue, a week later, that issue's gone.
Yeah, but have we published a bad issue?
Well, we haven't published as bad an issue as the New Republic when Stephen Glass was making shit up. But, you know, there are issues... That's very true. There are issues where you can't wait for it to go away.
Oh, last week for me. Absolutely. I know what you mean. Yeah, and hated that.
See, now there's that... Look... You were saying you can't equate the two, and yet the clapping in the New Republic scene was cut within
the classroom.
Within the classroom, you have to look at both of these as bullshit. Now look at the way.
Why would you think that was bullshit?
Because it's intercut with something that is bullshit.
And because,
but that makes no sense, Jeff. That makes no sense.
Why
do we make that connection necessarily?
Because the scene before,
the filmmaker has
in the lobby saying, "Are you going to pick us off one by one? This is bullshit. He's not like that. This is the Hack Heaven's the only one."
Oh, see, I disagree. I fundamentally disagree with that.
The intercutting of those two scenes says you're supposed to compare and contrast, and the tone of them is so similar that I say you have to say they're the same thing, which is fantasy.
Wow, that's amazing, because I see that, and I see that the reality is Chuck Lane, and the fantasy is
Would you ever consider
Steve
applauding me in a staff meeting?
Never.
No, exactly.
But I'll tell you, I think this film wants to convince audiences that it happened. I think it did.
I
agree with Jeff.
It's all good. I disagree with both of you.
I think Stephen Glass thinks of himself as a martyr, and hence these high school kids are going to clap for him. I think Chuck Lane thinks of himself as a hero, and so his staff is going to clap for him.
I think both
perspectives are bullshit.
That's fine, and I agree, but I don't think that the movie
understands that.
In any way leads you to think that the Chuck Lane stuff is bullshit. I think they mean you to take that at face value.
Nobody on his staff has shown any inclination to applaud anything
previous
to this.
Yeah, but it's that bullshit Norma Rae thing, Officer and a Gentleman, where we all applaud the end. And I think that's what happened. I think it's like we went for a kind of, you know, yeah, all right. We applaud the end movie.
I think it's
what we do.
But then it doesn't end at that point, and we don't get this rest of the movie. If that's really the way it's supposed to be, why not just end it there?
It's really interesting to me.
It's not as smart as we are.
To get out of
we're this, smarter than this, movie.
This argument, look at them in their suits and their freshly pressed shirts and their ties that are all the way up there. And both him and Chuck are in that. And I talked about how casual stuff like this, with him in his jacket and his sweater and his shirt, compared to the suit and thing.
Right.
I don't know what it means, but I think it's really interesting that now they're in this formal setting and
with lawyers.
They're reacting with each other. They're interacting with each other very differently.
Yeah. Well, they should, right.
But I think it's interesting how even the wardrobe is really important. I mean, just look at how he looks right there. You only get his shoulders and the very top of his tie and his shirt, but you know enough. And I love that last shot.
Yeah, I do too.
Because he's clearly not paying any attention to what's going on.
And that's a more interesting movie than the movie we just watched.
I disagree.
Really,
I disagree. Maybe I'm not giving us enough credit, but I think any movie is exactly as interesting as it's reasonable to read it. And I think the reading that I've given it and the reading that I is perfectly reasonable.
Forgotten he was killed.
Yeah, let me throw this at you real fast.
Bill Zay's lawyer just says he's living in New York.
I graduated from law school.
I love that.
I do not think this movie is perfect, and I would agree with you that
great movies are never perfect.
Well, no, I disagree with that. But really? As we've discussed before,
we agree on anything?
No. But I think the use of courier is a mistake. I will agree with you on the use of courier in the introduction and epilogue.
Okay. Alright.
Now we are at the end of our commentary. We are probably not going to comment too much on the end credits, which have just begun.
Although, you know, Christensen is spelled totally wrong, dude. I mean,
Peter Sarsgaard is different than Stellan Skarsgård.
Right, yeah. Actually, this is funny. When I read a thing in Entertainment Weekly about Kinsey a couple of years back, and said that Peter Sarsgaard was going to be naked, and the first thing I thought was Stellan Skarsgård. I was like, well, he's always naked, so big deal, whatever. And then it was Peter Sarsgaard, which, you know.
Made you much more excited.
Well, yeah, but, you know. So, yeah, weird. Nothing accomplished.
I disagree with that completely. I'm looking for the hairstylist in the end credits. I hope that the person is recognized.
Yeah. When is your fucking Jeff Bridges, Tim Robbins thing going to see print? Actual print?
Never.
Jeff has written this amazing thing.
I did actually submit that to some website at some point, and they rejected it. So.
Why? Just hair
because
bias,
I think they were looking for something different than what I provided. Different from what I provided.
What were they looking for?
I think they were actually looking for something about movies rather than how much I want to fuck Jeff Bridges and Tim Robbins. I mean,
hey.
But hey,
article was about how much you don't want to fuck Tim Robbins.
Oh, don't ruin it for people. Key hairdresser, Gayton Landry. And Manon Paquette.
Shout out to the hairdressers.
Yeah, all right. Hide all you want behind the hairdressers. Fine. Do what you gotta do. It's all good.
Now, this movie is like an hour and a half long, and the other movies we've been talking about are like 3 hours long.
Do you
Magnolia
have the stamina?
And JFK.
Do you have the stamina for me, dude?
I have to say, we have to order pizza, because I'm not letting y'all drink an hour and a half before we get started.
I'm ready for Magnolia. I'm ready for Magnolia.
Magnolia will be a lot of fun.
You were so mad at me during that class. You were so mad at me. No, you really were a little bit mad at me, weren't you?
You disagreed with me vociferously. That's okay.
No, but you were
mad.
Especially
thanks to John McLaughlin. Who's that?
Oh, Bambi, he was mad.
I don't think
I was mad. I was a little irritated. I don't remember why, but I did.
I don't know why.
No, it's all right.
Why was he mad?
I think because...
We did bets on whether you'd show up, but that was different.
I think because you were...
I said one really mean thing to you, which I should apologize for.
You don't need to apologize.
I totally want to know.
No. I went, misread. It was a really kind of mean... Yeah.
That was probably it.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry about that. I felt bad about that, just so you know.
He didn't mention it to me, so he wasn't that
well,
bad.
Well, no. I think he was, and I felt bad. So,
I guess what it comes down to for me is I don't think it's appropriate to ever...
It's dedicated to Michael Caine.
I think you and I have very different readings of this movie, and obviously we've articulated our differences, and now we're at the end of the movie, so I'm going to push stop. But
that was fun.
But I do think that...
I think
it's important to... at least allow for the validity of other people's readings.
Absolutely.
And so to say in the heat of the moment that something is being misread is fine, but fundamentally your reaction to a movie and how it affects you and how you feel about it I can't say that it's invalid because it's not.
Yeah.
It's valid because you feel it.
Yeah.
And
I felt bad about that.
As you should have.
Well, okay.
Okay, we're done now.